I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Wayne Grady joins me now, the noted author and translator, recently published his first novel, Emancipation Date, came out to great notices in the press, and was longlisted for the Giller Prize. In the book, Jack Lewis is a Navy musician who's got a dark secret. He meets Vivian Fanshawe while he's stationed in Newfoundland during the Second World War, and they end up going to her family's hometown of Windsor, Ontario. Jack's heritage emerges, and the book goes on to look at the era and race. I'll get Mr. Grady to tell us as much as possible about this book, what inspired it, and what this book says about identity, the one that society foists upon one, and the identity we have of ourselves. The website for more is at waynegrady.ca. Emancipation Day is published by Doubleday. Mr. Grady joined me last week while he was in town for events at the Vancouver Writers' Festival. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Vancouver today, Wayne Grady. Mr. Grady, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I've started the book, and I quite like it.
Good. That always helps with it.
But the premise intrigues me, and I haven't finished the book, but unfortunately I've read reviews and articles on it and sort of have an idea of what happens.
Right.
I understand that you started this as, say, a memoir, or as a nonfiction book, but it ended up a novel that we have now. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Because I've written 14 books of nonfiction and done a lot of magazine writing, my first instinct was, when I had the story in my hand, was that, you know, this would make a great work of nonfiction. And so that's how I started working on it. The backstory is that about 16 years ago, I discovered, through various means, that my father was actually African Canadian, whose skin was light enough to allow him to pass for white. So during the war, he joined the Navy, which at the time was not accepting blacks, and then was he was a musician, so he would join the Navy band, and was transferred to St. John's, Newfoundland in 1943, where he met the woman who was eventually become my mother. And she was a white woman who, with English background, and he never told her about, his own family background, but he did bring her back to Windsor, where he had been born, she met his family and, drew her own conclusions as to what his family background was. But he still denied it when she said to him, are you black? Are you African Canadian? And he said no. And for the rest of his life, he continued to say no, even after I had confronted him with all of this evidence that I had got from archives and things. So the book is based on their story. How Jack manages to continue his self identity as a white person in spite of all the evidence against that, and also how Vivian stays with him and allows him to, even though she's very, very strongly suspicious about the truth of his background, allows him to live that lie.
So the book takes place in Windsor, does it?
Both in Windsor, and it starts in St. John's. Well, it starts in Windsor, follows them to St. John's, follows Jack to St. John's. There are a couple of chapters there where he meets Vivian and Vivian's family, and so on and so forth, he goes to sea at one point what was called the Derry Run, which is an escort duty run from St. John's to Londonderry, Ireland, and back, which was another test for Jack, because in 1943 the Navy started to allow blacks to join the Navy, but they didn't allow the blacks to go to sea. So when Jack goes to sea, it's like further proof that he has actually been accepted as a white person. So, and then he brings her back to Windsor to meet his family after they're married, and the rest of the book takes place in Windsor.
So what was Windsor like in the 1940s for Jack and for Vivian, and in terms of race especially, because that's one of the themes in the book, right?
It's the main theme, I guess. Windsor in 1943 it was a kind of Canadian kind of racism. There were no laws saying that blacks couldn't buy property in certain parts of the city, but in effect, blacks never bought property in a certain part of the city. There are no laws saying that blacks couldn't go into movie theaters, but if they went into a movie theater, they had to sit in the balcony. They could go into restaurants and and lunch counters, but they wouldn't get served, and there was no law saying they couldn't go in there, but somehow they just, no waitress would ever come to their table. So there was that kind of subtlety. The car companies, Chrysler and Ford and GM, they hired blacks, but the blacks always worked in the foundries, never on the assembly line, or certainly never in any, you know, positions of managerial positions or anything. So there was this kind of, you know, subtle racism. And I know that it's not, you know, Alabama in the 40s or mm-hmm. 50s, but it was something that someone like Jack, who was able to get away because he was born with lighter skin, would be bad enough to make him want to do that.
And this is a novel, but was it important for you to sort of highlight that part of history for the rest of us, say?
Well, I think it was just an interesting part of history because it was based on my parents. That's where it took place, and that's when it took place. So that's where it was. I mean, I didn't choose Windsor in order to illustrate the racism in Canada. It sort of came the other way around. And also because Jack and my father were both musicians, Windsor and Detroit were great locations to write about music, especially jazz. And Detroit in the 40s was a great jazz center with all the big jazz musicians passing through between Chicago and New York. And so jazz music plays a big part in the novel in the sense that it's there. There's some great music going on, and also it symbolizes or is kind of a metaphor for the blending of the races between white and black, because you had black musicians playing jazz, you had white musicians playing jazz. They didn't really care about race. They were just playing this great music. So the music became a kind of a great place for those two races, for the racial divide to be explored, and who was crossing it and who was honoring it.
Well, what did your dad play?
The right word.
What did your dad play?
He played trombone.
And was he with a band or?
In Windsor, he was only 18 mm-hmm. when he left Windsor when he joined the Navy. But before that, he played with the Sea Cadets band in Windsor, which ironically was known as the All Whites. Not only because only white people played it, but they had white uniforms. I mean, I think this is again the Canadian thing. We call ourselves the All Whites because we wear white uniforms, but in fact, they're known as the All-Whites because they only accepted white musicians. And then when he joined the Navy, he joined the Navy Band, as does Jack Lewis in the novel.
Is this a sort of music, because it's a sort of the Sinatra big band stuff of the 40s, is this a sort of music that you listen to yourself?
Actually, I do a little bit. I listen more to the Dizzy Gillespie, John Coltrane kind of jazz, not the big band. The big band, and in the book I make a thing about that, because the big bands, like the Tommy Dorsey mm-hmm. band and the Glenn Miller bands, they're playing black music basically, but they're homogenizing it and pasteurizing it and turning it into swing music for white audiences. But it started out as black music. So my father and Jack Lewis in the book, they like that music. They like Tommy Dorsey, and Tommy Dorsey was a trombonist, so uh-huh. so you know, naturally Jack would want to emulate him, but they like that music because it appealed to white audiences, and the black musicians like Dizzy Gillespie, they weren't playing dance music, they weren't playing, you know, entertaining music, they were playing what to them was just their souls. They were playing real music, and so that's the distinction that I make in the book.
Well, while writing the book, are you listening to music?
No, I not that. You mean at the same time?
Yeah.
No, I can't listen to anything when I'm writing. I mean, uh-huh. I can't even. I have to be in a place where there's no even outside noises, like, you know, cars or radios or any kind of thing. I live in the country, and we have 15 acres, and I built myself a writing cabin way back in the back of the. Of the acreage, and it's totally quiet back there. I don't even have phones or electricity, so mm. I really need total silence in order to concentrate on the work.
So Jack's dad in the book is named William Henry Lewis,
mm-hmm.
and there is a conflict between the two. I don't know if there's a conflict, but
there is.
there is a sort of, I guess, a conflict within him about...
Yeah.
I guess, giving birth, having a son,
yeah,
who is light-skinned while he's black, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for William Henry, who has never had anything but trouble from white people, he suddenly finds himself with a white son. And you know, Jack really is white. I mean, his skin is white. Like my father, even when after I learned about his heritage, there's no way I could have told from looking at him that he had any black blood in him at all. He was very white.
Uh-huh.
And so in the novel, Jack is very white, and Jack believes he's white. He doesn't think of himself as a black person who's passing for white. He thinks of himself as a white person. And his whole struggle in the book is to get other people to believe that, to get other people to see it his way. And so for his problem with his father is that his father is quite happy to be part of the black community in Windsor. He's proud of being black. His sister Alvina is one of the early workers for Black Pride in Windsor, trying to get the Emancipation Day picnic into something that celebrates blackness rather than hides it. His mother is a very prominent member of the First Baptist Church in Windsor. So Jack is turning his back on all of that, and you know, the psychology of passing is that when you pass, when you sort of make it clear that you're going to try to live as a white person, the black people around you and in your family, they allow you to do that. That's fine, but they feel abandoned or rejected, as indeed they are. So there's that ambiguity between wanting Jack to succeed, but also feeling rejected by him as a member of the family. And so that goes throughout their relationship in the book.
And this idea of passing, I mean, this is obviously looked, I guess it's looked down upon now, and in the past. What do you explore in terms of what goes through someone like Jack's mind as to justifying doing that?
Well, you know, there's no doubt that in Jack's mind, living as a white person would be materially better than living as a black person.
Easier and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are jobs that he could get that he wouldn't have been able to get. He could go into a restaurant. I mean, all of what we think of when we think of what a white person can do, Jack and a black person couldn't do in the 40s, Jack could do. No one questioned him. I mean, when he was in St. John's, he was totally accepted as a white person. By Vivian's family, by the Navy, by, you know, the barbers, everybody, no one suspected that he was actually a black person who was passing for white. And so he had made it, and so he no longer had to live like the people that he'd grown up with, as he saw them, you know, not being able to get certain jobs and not being able to go into certain, you know, having to have their own barbershops, their own restaurants, their own sections of town and things. He got away from that. That's what he was trying to get away from. It's been suggested that he did it for altruistic reasons, so that his future children and wife would have better lives. I think that might eventually have become the case, but when he was 18, he just wanted to get out. He wanted to get himself out.
And did you ever get to talk to your dad about, say, his motivations, and did that, say, feed into the character of Jack, perhaps?
In a way, it did. I did talk to my dad. He was still alive when I found out all of this, but he denied any knowledge of it. And his line was, "It's news to me." So I didn't get a lot of information from him about why he passed or what it was like to live in Windsor as a black person. In the black community, he just suddenly lost his memory after I approached him with this information. I mean, he didn't actually say I was wrong. He just said he didn't know. He had no idea that his parents were black. Of course, I can't see how that's remotely possible. But of course, he could not suddenly say, "Oh yeah, you caught me. I'm really black. You know, sorry to have lied to you for the last 55 years."
So what does this do for you as a son, and your own identity? I'm sure you think about it.
Well, yeah, I do, and I don't know what I think about it. That, you know,
Even after writing a novel, you don't know.
Well, I'm not in the novel, right?
Yeah,
the novel ends the year I'm born.
Yeah.
So, you know, stay tuned. And in a way, I wrote the novel in order to find out what I think about my father. I mean, how I feel about my father. When I started writing the book, I was very angry with him because he had determined my fate by taking us away from Windsor, turning his back on his family. I grew up with no extended family on his side, no grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, none of that. And so when I realized that I had all that, I could have had all of that, I was quite angry with my dad. And so when I started writing the book, that anger got in the way of me writing a proper book. I had one of the things that evolved in me as I was working on this book was I had to learn to forgive my dad and to portray Jack Lewis in the novel as a likable guy. Otherwise, why would Vivian fall in love with him? Why would she stay with him after she discovered the truth? Why would the reader keep reading instead of throwing the book across the room, as I was tempted to do a few times as I was writing it?
Huh.
So I had to, and in order to do that, I had to learn to like my dad again. And that was a huge realization, and it didn't come until, you know, draft 20 or something like that. I mean, I worked on this book for 15 years, and that was one of the major things I had to overcome, was this anger against my father.
And so, I mean, do you have any ideas about the meaning of your own life because of, say, the decisions he made that determined your fate?
Well, yes, in the sense of, I mentioned that I grew up without any sense of being part of an extended family.
Uh-huh.
Unless you've been through that, I didn't really even understand that, because it was, not having an extended family was normal to me. So when I met my wife, Marilyn, who is part of a huge family, and she knows all her sisters and her cousins and her aunts and uncles and her nieces and nephews, I mean, to me that was so foreign. I thought she was the odd one. And I thought that, you know, why would anyone need to know all that? Why would anyone need to know that her second cousin in Winnipeg is getting married next week? You know, that kind of thing. Why would anyone say, oh, you know, we have a week off, let's go visit my grandmother, you know?
Uh-huh.
All of that was totally foreign to me and new, and it took me a long time to realize that I was the odd one, not Marilyn. And also when I started having children, I didn't want my children to turn their back on me the way my father had turned his back on his parents. So
yeah.
it did have a lot of personal repercussions and family repercussions that I'm still working out. And that, you know, when I write the next novel, that's probably what I'm going to be looking at, is that the effect of all of that on me as a person, and all of that is the psychological effect. I don't think there's any you know, physical, biological change in me at all now that I know that I have African blood. I think it's all socialization that I have to sort of come to terms with.
And the next book, is that a sequel to this?
In a way, it's one of the characters in Emancipation Day is now 91 years old, and she's looking back on her life and she's recounting tales about how the Lewis family got to Windsor, you know, where they started out from, how they got away from slavery in the southern states before the Civil War, and how they gradually worked their way up and to arrive in Windsor in the 1880s. So it's both a sequel and a prequel, if you like.
Now, this is your first novel, but not your first book. You mentioned earlier that you spent 15 years with this and more than 20 drafts.
Mm-hmm.
You are a writer, but did the process of writing a novel change whatever ideas you had about writing in the process?
It did, you know. I mean, I knew I could write. I have been writing all my life, and I knew I had a great story because I just, you know, I do enough reading and writing to recognize a good story when
mm-hmm.
I come across one. So, and this one just landed in my lap. But what I didn't know, I thought I could write this book with, you know, as I had written all of my other 14 books, just sit down and start on page one and then stand up when you get to page 300 or whatever. But as it turned out, I really had no idea how to write a novel. I could write, and I had a story, but I could write 300 pages, but those 300 pages somehow didn't add up to a novel. And I didn't know what to do to make it, to turn it into a novel. You know, when you're writing a nonfiction book, when you get stuck on page 100 and you don't know what comes next, you look in your notebook and see what came next in real life, right?
Yeah.
But in fiction, you get to page 100 and you don't know what comes next. There's nowhere to turn. You have to make up something that goes next, and it has to be the right thing. So I found that extremely, extremely difficult. And it wasn't really until I found my editor, Nita Pronovo at Doubleday, who read the book and told me what I needed to do to make that, to turn it into a novel. I needed to forgive my father, for one thing. I needed to make Jack a likable person so that Vivian would actually, people would believe that Vivian fell in love with him. And I needed someone like William Henry, the voice of Jack's father, to be a kind of the Greek chorus who could inform the reader and through his part of the novel about Jack growing up, because Jack didn't think about himself as a black kid growing up in Windsor. He thought of himself as a white kid who somehow got mysteriously mislocated in the black section of Windsor. And so that in order to get the true story of Jack's youth, I needed to create his father as being a stronger voice in the novel. So those are that's the advice I got from Nita. And once I got that advice, it was like one more draft and the book was done.
Really?
Yeah. It was amazing.
As a debut, it's been pretty good. I mean, the notices have been pretty good. You got long listed for the Giller.
Yes. I'm astounded and delighted that that happened.
Yeah. So you will write. I mean, you are working on another novel now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking of, say, another novel outside of these characters, outside of these themes that you have in Emancipation Day?
Well, that's a good question. I must say that I'm enjoying the process of writing fiction. This book has done well enough to encourage me that I'll be able to publish another book of fiction, and I guess it depends on how the second book does, whether I'll be writing a third book. But you know, with the publishing business the way it is now, you're sort of only as good as your last book.
Yeah.
And this book has done well enough that you know I'm fairly certain that my next book will get accepted. So we'll just take it from there. But I hope it does well enough, because I feel like I'm 20 years old again and starting out as a writer, which is really quite astonishing for someone who became a first novelist and a senior citizen on the same day.
The book came out on your 65th birthday, is that right?
August 1st.
Yeah.
Emancipation Day.
Yeah, which is the actual day, yeah. You're in Vancouver for the Writers' Festival.
Yeah.
You and Marilyn come out here often, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is about our fifth or sixth Vancouver Festival. We love it. It's the best festival in Canada, with the possible exception of the Kingston Writers' Fest, which Marilyn is artistic director of.
Right.
But Vancouver's a great festival. We come out even if we don't have a book out, and we just want to hang out and go to the events. Hal usually gets us to do something when we're out here, you know, moderating an event or mm-hmm. interviewing somebody. But really, it's a pleasure to come out here here in the Granville Island Hotel, looking out. I'm sitting here looking through a window with a sunny bay with boats floating in it, and you know, you just don't get that much in central southeastern Ontario.
Yeah. Have you heard from readers yet of Emancipation Day?
Yeah, I have. I've had an astonishing number of people emailing me and Facebooking me and coming up to me at events, after events, or even on the sidewalk, telling me how much they really enjoyed the book. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm any kind of self-aggrandizement. I'm mm-hmm. absolutely astonished that this book has touched so many people. And they've come up to me and just thanked me. I mean, you don't get this when you write books about vultures or coyotes, which is what I was doing before. You know, very few people came up to me and said, you know, that book about vultures really changed my life.
Really moved me.
But that's the kind of thing that I'm getting now, and from friends and but also some from just people who, you know, have bought the book. It was named as a Heather's pick in chapters, and I think that got it out to a lot of people who otherwise might not have heard of it. And you know, it was featured in Chatelaine magazine as the September pick. I mean, I'm just astounded that it's done so well, and getting long listed for the Giller, of course, was like icing. And yeah, I'm humbled by this thing. I wish I discovered fiction 40 years ago.
Now, the October 1970 book, that's nominated, right?
It was long listed also. It didn't make the
short
list.
Oh, it didn't make the short list.
No.
So you have won awards as a translator before, right?
Yeah, I won the Governor General's Award for a translation of a novel, an early novel by Anthony Maillet. I've been shortlisted for the Governor General's Award twice, two other times for translation. So yeah, I've translated. I think October 1970 is my 15th book that I have translated, and it was long listed for the Giller, not because of the translation, I think, but because it's a very good novel and a very interesting one. It takes place during the Quebec Revolution in October 1970, when you remember that the October Crisis and the murder of Pierre Laporte. And so it's a pretty much a roman à clef. All the characters that we know about from history are in the book, plus a few others who are trying to sort things out. So it revisits that time and comes up with some pretty interesting theories about what was really going on behind the scenes people never heard about at the time.
Well, I can't wait to finish Emancipation Day.
Oh, good.
And I really enjoyed talking to you today. Congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it, Wayne.
Well, thanks, Joe.
WayneGrady.ca is the website for more. The book is called Emancipation Day. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, Wayne Grady, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.